And I think that's a good lead in talking more about AI wars too. And again, we are approaching 2 hours, and who knows how much longer we could really go on for. But I do want to touch on AI wars too, and I think that will probably take us, well, hopefully to the end of this cast, unless we go on any more tangents.
James is like reaching for the gin or
Yeah.
something.
No, I'm loving it. This is good stuff.
So, as for those of you listening to this cast right now, if you've made it this long, thank you for still listening. But as of this moment, we are recording this. The AI Wars 2 Kickstarter campaign has been going on for, I think, 9 days. Is that right?
That sure. That's right. That sounds right.
And,
There's 22 days left, so yeah, that
okay.
sounds right.
So, with AI Wars 2, as you said earlier, that this is sort of you taking all the lessons you've learned with developing the original AI Wars, and especially with what you've been experimenting with lately, with 3D, with games like In Case of Emergency, etc. So, with AI Wars 2, are there. I guess the first big question is, you guys have obviously developed AI Wars for a very long time. There are so many expansions and revisions and just altering the game that you've done over the years. With your plans for AI Wars 2, if it hopefully gets funded, are all those elements going to find their way into the second game, or have you taken more of a leaner approach with AI Wars 2?
It's kind of a middle ground, honestly. There are some features that we know that were very unpopular in the original game, like Defender mode. That was something that was added in one of the expansions, and people were very excited about it in advance, and then they just didn't play it. And so we're like, well, that's an easy one to say no. There's some other features that are very popular with a lot of players, and then a few players really hate them. They're an optional feature. Like champions, and we are not including those as part of the 1.0 because those are really kind of a mini game, and we don't really need to have quote unquote every mini game from the original game in there. I'd rather build a really solid foundation of the core game and have that be as broad and flexible as possible without getting into things like some of that. Like the champions, which you're able to go off adventuring in separate nebulas from the rest of your fleet and all that sort of stuff. And we'd really like a chance to kind of revise those so that a larger set of people enjoy them too. So the other thing is that with some of the stuff like the Fallen Spire campaign, that was also very popular. And that was more of kind of a story campaign that you could turn on and then a thing would appear somewhere in the galaxy and you could go interact with it. And the more you kept kind of following the little breadcrumbs that, you know, little kind of basically quests that it would pop up, then you could work to an alternate ending of the game where instead of being like this kind of guerrilla warfare fighter, you are instead having, you know, giant guns that come in and you're duking it out Godzilla style, right? And people really liked that. But again, that's kind of gets into that mini game territory. And one of the things that I didn't like about that is that that Godzilla-like duking it out warfare is really fun. But if you're going to play that, you have to go through all those quests and whatnot first and play normally for a while. And then you get to unlock the Godzilla stuff for a little while at the very end and you go out with the, you know, big flare. So what we did with that is we said, okay, well, we're going to make the player races so they're not always human. They can play as a human or two of the different alien races. And one of the alien races is the Spire, and they are that Godzilla right from the start of the game so that you can get that Fallen Spire type of experience in this game. But you don't have to go through the campaign first. You just start that way. And so, in a number of places, for one thing, that's simpler for us to implement. And I think it's actually going to be more fun. And we can always build in things like campaigns later on. But basically, we've been trying to kind of combine things that maybe were really ancillary or to the, you know, just not core bits, combine those where we can. And there were a lot of ship types previously. There were just hundreds of types of ships, and some of them were ones that were very similar to one another in a way that was kind of annoying. And so what we did was we said, okay, we're going to have way fewer ship types this time. We're going to add a tech upgrade system so that basically almost every ship type from the first game is possible to recreate in this mm-hmm. one. But you start with things and then are able to kind of customize them, which has two benefits. One, you don't have hundreds of little icons to learn mm-hmm. as a player. Two, it's not so rare that you get a given ship type. If you really like having tractor beams on, you know, like Etherjet tractors in the first game, mm-hmm. then that is something that fairly rarely comes up because there's just so many units in the rotation that your odds of getting that are a lot lower. Mm-hmm. So with this approach, the base unit for that, which I think is actually just the fighter, it has upgrades that you can add tractor beams onto it so you can get Etherjet, the equivalent of Etherjet tractors much, much, much more easily. But then we only have like something like 40 or 50 kind of basic unit types instead of several hundred. And so that makes it a lot more condensed. The number of combinations and permutations that are actually there is actually greater than what it was in the first game. Mm-hmm. But you have to expend some science points to, you know, choose those upgrades if that's what you want to mm-hmm. do. And so mostly we've taken an approach of let's bring as much across as possible, but also let's not be stupid about it. And so there are a number of things that we put into the design document originally, and then we said, okay, those are too big in terms of the scope. Those are going to blow the budget mm-hmm. up to more than a reasonable amount for the 1.0. So those are going to go into a section that we call not for 1.0 limbo. And so those things, they could be stretch goals on the Kickstarter. They could be future expansions. If the game is selling really well, they might be free post-release updates. They might never be mm-hmm. done. You know, it, who knows? But they're strong candidates for being done in some fashion. And so what we're hoping to accomplish there is giving the feeling of something that is substantially deeper than before, and that you have more options at your disposal, and that feels new again at the same time as being familiar, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. And that is definitely smaller than the first game in terms of the like ticking off every last little feature. But at the same time, that during the course of a single campaign actually gives you a richer experience. So for instance, instead of there only being two AI types per map, there's instead solar systems, which didn't exist before. And then each solar system has its own AI personality in there. So it's this way richer landscape. Mm-hmm. And we actually have maybe 5 or 6 fewer personalities in the sequel compared to the original. And that's going down from like about 50 to about like 44 or something. So it's a reduction, but not at a giant one. And in one game, you're moving up from 2 to whatever number of solar systems mm-hmm. you're playing with, which is probably 6 or 8, or it really depends because you can customize that. So it depends on how long of a game you want to play. Yeah. And so from a per campaign standpoint, what I like to call like the strategic landscape is much richer, and it's a bigger game per campaign. In a cross campaign sense, there's a bit less content, but that's something that we could quickly dwarf if we were doing expansions and so forth in a post 1.0 fashion.
Interesting. And again, this is always that challenge when you're trying to build a sequel to a game. And we've seen, again, another hour-long discussion about that challenge of where do you go with a sequel? Why should people play number two, number three, number four, et cetera, when the first game is still there? One of the things that we've talked about...
And accessibility and the interface are the really two big ones for us, because that was something that really killed it for a lot of people, was that the learning curve was miles high and the interface is clunky and the game itself is not pretty. Yeah. And so addressing those things, I think, really helps make the case for the sequel.
Yeah.
And but we did it without like killing the depth.
Yeah.
And we worked with our player base extensively for about a month and a half, making that giant design document. They were reading it and commenting on it and shooting down. I had some wild ideas that I was like, here's a crazy idea. And they're like telling me all the reasons it's a bad idea. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. Mm-hmm. Don't even need to prototype that one. That's a terrible idea, you know? And so we went through that whole process of kind of vetting it with the core players in order to get to that point with the sequel. Because I wouldn't have been able to just pull this out of my head just in isolation, sitting in my room somewhere by myself.
Definitely. And what you just said regarding accessibility and UI design, that was actually going to be my next point too, regarding why we see the importance of sequels. When I spoken to developers previously, we talked about how the sequel is your chance to make the game that you want. It's a chance to refine that concept. When you're not just building and experimenting at the same time, you have that foundation. You can now say, where can I go from here? And this is one thing in a previous critical thought that I talked about regarding the balance between uniqueness and refinement. And the AAA space is definitely where we see refinement come into play. When you've made, you know, three Assassin's Creeds, or how many, or we up to like seven or eight Call of Duties by now, you can, they know that process. They know their foundation. They can now take it however they want. Another good example, Battlefield, which I know Battlefield 1 is, I think it's either coming out or it's almost...
It's a week. Okay. It's about a week away, actually.
All right, from this recording. And again, that's a series that has been iterated on. They've seen what works. They've seen what doesn't work. And they can now take it further. And like you said with AI Wars, and making that transition from 1 to 2, you have a much solid game plan now with building this as a foundation rather than, again, starting from scratch with a completely different concept.
Right. And, I mean, we know what makes it fun, and we know also the pain points.
Yes.
You know, the games can run too long, and it's not that we dislike long games, but some of that is what people, you know, call Netflix time, right? Where they're, you know, refleeting or whatever, and they're just like, okay, well, I'm going to kind of, you know, watch Netflix some while this is happening. And that is something that we want to eliminate, the Netflix time, and just let them actually play the game, you know, and not by like shortening the game in a taking out meaningful gameplay, but in a, let's get rid of some of the tedious bits. And there's some things where you had to like know to find this one specific unit or build it if you didn't have it, then send it to a planet, then know to click it, then click a certain button, and then you're like are colonizing a new planet. And it's like,
wow,
you should be able to just go to the planet and click colonize, you know? And that's not a dumbing down, that's a streamlining, you know? It's like, you know, there's no reason for all that other stuff. And so there's a bunch of things too where there were things that are like, okay, players always do these actions. Like, this is something like if you've got these junk piles around your planets, you always want those filled with metal harvesters. There is no exception to that where you don't want to be mining.
It's not a choice, basically.
Yeah. There is a minor choice in the sense of if one keeps getting shot to pieces, do you keep rebuilding it or do you just leave it alone and say, I give up on that one? But that's not a very interesting choice. And that is a rare case of there being a choice. So almost never is it a choice. And when it is, it's not an interesting mm-hmm. one. So for that, we said, okay, let's make these things be, we're calling derelicts instead, which are these like old ships that you can kind of rebuild and mine. Mm-hmm. And there's these invisible nanobots that, you know, are mining those ships instead from, and they can still be shot up by enemies, which is important, mm-hmm. but that just reduces their metal generation capacity for you down to a certain floor. And the reason there's a certain floor there is because when you have like next to no metal income, then your hands are just absolutely yeah. tied, and it will come back, and it's just, you're just sitting there. So again, you get into Netflix time. Mm-hmm. And so reducing it down to a certain floor within the AI, and with it designed around those sort of ideas, mm-hmm. the AI can be balanced such that mm-hmm. Its ability to crush you is not dependent on it being able to completely floor out your metal production, for instance, which it wasn't before anyway, but supposing it was, that would be something we'd be able to design around. Mm-hmm. And then the derelicts automatically get repaired by your either mothership or the command station that you have on that planet. And all that is automated mm-hmm. because you don't need to care about that. Yeah. But at the same time, there is a cost to it of like how much, you know, how much do I want to allocate towards like repairing things on this planet and all that? And so then we have these like SimCity like screens where you kind of budget like, okay, I want this percentage of my power on this planet to go towards like in general repairing stuff, and this percentage to go there, and this percentage to go there. And, you know, we have little profiles of like an aggressive planet, an economic planet, a whatever planet, a defensive planet, you know, and that then people can make their own little profiles as well that they name whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And they say real quickly, like, this is my economic planet, but then when it's suddenly accidentally the front lines because some other front lines fell, then they're like, okay, now this is a defensive profile planet. They just go in and, you know, and, but at the same time, if they want to fine tune that more, they can, but they don't have to spend a while doing it. And that same sort of customization was in the first game. But in order to do that, you had to like tear down your command station, mm-hmm. build a new command station, unlock command stations with science first. You had to build foldouts for some command stations. You had mm-hmm. to choose whether or not to build whichever other like secondary buildings. It was all expressed through units. And so there was all this mess that you had to build. Mm-hmm. And if the AI destroyed any of it, then you'd be out of balance for a while.
Rebuild it again if you didn't pay attention to it. And then
And we made auto rebuilders mm-hmm. for the first game, and then we made like remains, and so then it would get rebuilt, but you would be out of balance during mm-hmm. that period. And so then you weren't just weakened, you suddenly had a different performance profile. It would be kind of mm-hmm. like, you know, your car still works, but I took off your left rear tire. Like, it's still gonna run, but things are not ideal for right yeah. now. And with the new way, it's kind of like, okay, your car is still either like, you know, a Mazda or a Porsche, but it's now running at 10% capacity of a Porsche or 10% capacity of a Mazda or whatever. Yeah. And then it's going to build back up on whatever threshold. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe Mazdas get, you know, rebuilt back mm-hmm. up way faster than a Porsche. But, you know, a Porsche has, you know, other benefits, mm-hmm. obviously. So that sort of thing lets us really streamline what the player is able to do mm-hmm. and let them look at one screen and say, this is what's happening here in terms of, like, how this planet is operating, kind of like those mm-hmm. screens in SimCity. And I feel like that's a really, really big benefit because you can kind of teach yourself if you have to. If you want to skip all the tutorials and stuff, you can kind of fumble your way through a lot of that sort of thing. And that's really kind of a goal of mine. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not just going to intentionally dump people into it, but ideally it's intuitive enough that they can fumble enough to, you know, get along mm-hmm. with. With the original AI War, there just was not really any hope of that mm-hmm. For a new player. I mean, unless they were just going to spend just yeah. hours like going, what even is this? And just kind of poking everything. Yeah. So, you know, Yeah, like you said, and the sequel really gives us a chance to not so much experiment, but just refine yes. like crazy.
And that is a very important point. And we see this with a lot of good game designers when they're able to take something that was like a 15-step process and refine it down to like one or two. And again, as you said, Chris, when you have choices that it's not exactly a choice, it's just more busy work on the player. Yes, it's, you know, it's gameplay for them to do, but it's not meaningful gameplay. As a quick example, that's one thing that I saw with StarCraft II. In the original version of it, they didn't tell you like the correct ratio to, you know, workers to mine crystal and Vespain gas. This was something that, you know, you had to figure out through play. But just like with a lot of things, this wasn't a choice. You're never not going to want full workers, you know, mining and harvesting gas. And then I think like an expansion or like patches later on, now it says, you know, this crystal field can support 10 workers or have 8 workers refining gas. And all it does is it lets players get to the good stuff quicker, and it just reduces, you know, like the mental hurdles they'll need to figure out in order to play your game.
Right. Yeah, and so like my goal overall is to cut the play times for most players by about 30%, you know. And so a lot of the game times, you know, on the shorter end would run like 8 hours, but for the average player is 13 hours. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had some people that run well into the 40 or 60 hours, or we even had some people that did a 120-hour single campaign. Mm-hmm. And in all of those cases, across the board, I'm hoping that it will be cut down by about 30%, so that, you know, what was 13 hours, you know, is now, you know, closer to that 8-hour mm-hmm. mark. And I think that's much more palatable because you can do that in a couple of sessions versus, you know, like a getting into like 3 in a portion. Yeah.
And if if the game is still as deep or it's still as interesting during that time, then the player's not going to feel it. There's just going to be less busy work, less things for them to deal with to, again, get to that point. And, oh my goodness, so many topics today could easily turn into 7 to 10 hour discussions here.
Yeah, no kidding.
I hate to call things short, Chris, because I always love talking to you, but we are over 2 hours into this podcast now, and I know that, especially with not just talking about Arkham, but especially talking about AI Wars, you know, this could go on for a very long time. And I know, James, how are you doing? Are you holding up well?
I'm listening to it. I'm talking about a lot of good stuff, and I think a lot of that stuff just, it really needs to be mm-hmm. said. It really does.
Yeah, so I hate to call things, well, I guess, quote-unquote short with you at this point, Chris. But I do think before people start falling asleep or before this actually turns into like the length of an AI Wars play, this podcast, we do need to start to wrap things up.
Yeah, tell people that, you know, turn this on, you know, before they go to bed and they can listen to it in their sleep every night.
They'll die,
you know,
they'll,
osmosis, yeah, and then they wake up and like, I need to.
There we go, exactly. Yeah, and it's always, I mean, for those of you who've listened to our previous discussions with Chris, you know we can go the distance with these casts. And again, any one of these topics, we could probably spend another hour or two easily on. But I'm afraid for those of you who are still with us who haven't fallen asleep yet, we are going to wrap things up. To end the cast on, Chris, I just want to go over, I guess, hopefully quickly, I don't know how long we can go with this, but just a few just general questions regarding AI Wars 2 and the Kickstarter campaign itself.
Sure.
All right, so the first one is, obviously, as we've said, it's been going on for a little over a week now as of the time of this recording. For those of you listening to this cast, we're going to try to have this up either the week of this recording or the following week. For people listening to this cast who haven't taken a look at the Kickstarter itself, if you do get the funding, what is kind of like the time frame you're looking to develop AI Wars 2 by?
So it is currently the middle of October. So we're looking to have the first. So we have three basic tiers of backers. People who get the game in alpha, people who get it when it goes into early access, and people who get it 1.0. Mm-hmm. So for the people who are buying into it at the alpha level, we would be doing that in January. For the people who are looking at it for early access, that would be coming in May. And then for the 1.0 release, we are aiming for October with that, although that's got, probably shouldn't even say this, it's got a little bit of buffer in it, so we might come in early on that, but October is actually a better month for releasing stuff than September anyway, so we might just aim for October anyway. Yeah, so it's around about a year to 1.0. Early access, when we hit that, it's going to be priced at $30 instead of the usual $20, which is what it will be at launch. So taking the Prison Architect approach of being more expensive and then getting less expensive. And during at the start of early access, it won't be quite feature complete in terms of you know, the basic features and so forth of the version 2, but it will be well on its way to that. And, you know, what we deem a, we and the alpha tester players deem a, you know, worthwhile, fun experience. And then we'll finish the rest of that out and, during that period of early access.
Okay. So, as so with that said, obviously the game will be on Steam. Are you going to be selling it directly from the Arkane Games site, or will it only be available on Steam?
So it'll definitely be available through Steam and through Humble. We probably will not have a DRM-free versions until 1.0, just because of the ease of distributing stuff through Steam. You know, us not having to pay for bandwidth and stuff. We don't know if we're going to be on GOG yet or not. However, they've been very kind and have, like, they've actually done like a social media push for the game, the Kickstarter and so forth already, which was really nice of them. And they've been really enthusiastic about it. And so I have a feeling we're going to be carried on GOG. You know, but they don't, you know, confirm that sort of thing until much later. I mean, we're all set with Steam and Humble, but that said, the Steam version itself is technically DRM free as well. If somebody wants to copy the game out of the Steam folder after they've downloaded it, they can plop that on a thumb drive or whatever, carry that wherever they want, and it doesn't need the internet or anything. So, you know, Steam is a delivery vehicle, not, you know, DRM. But I mean, I know some people still don't like Steam, but so we will have a non-Steam version, but technically neither have DRM.
Okay. Now, I was looking at the Kickstarter page itself, and obviously you guys have been playing this out in terms of rewards and all the things you wanted to offer to the player. Now, I remember when we were first talking, like one of like the original podcasts that we did, and we talked about some of the challenges that you saw with Kickstarter and how you wanted to be very careful with approaching Kickstarter as a platform. I guess, from your own point of view, how did you, I guess, plan the Kickstarter campaign out? Again, considering your reservations and some of the challenges that you saw other developers when they went to Kickstarter.
Well, one of the things is I've backed Kickstarter campaigns since my first one was Castle Story, and I think, I don't know when that was, 2010 or 2011, at any rate, fairly early on for Kickstarter. You know, and I've backed one or two things a year overall, more than that on average, because I guess I've backed 29 things, but at least one or two things a year, less in recent years. So I've kind of watched what some of the other campaigns have done that have either made me happy or unhappy as a backer. And the one of the big things for me has been knowing what exactly it is you're going to get. And so hence the giant design document, which we then have distilled down a variety of ways. We did a giant Reddit AMA where I wrote over apparently 50 pages of responses to people in like Word document form. And so there's, you know, I'm trying to be like as completely clear about everything as possible so that people don't run into that sort of thing. And yeah, you probably remember me saying, I know I've said it on this show, and I think it was the first place I said it, you know, I'm really glad that Kickstarter is a thing, but I hope I never have to use it. And yeah, so I mean, a lot of that had to do with me and experimental games. I would never, ever want to do a Kickstarter for something like Stars Beyond Reach. Mm-hmm. That would have been an absolute nightmare. I mean, what a mess. I just, oh my gosh. And so with this project, AI War 2 is one of the few projects that I was like, okay, this is really something that makes sense for crowdfunding, because people who played the first, I can explicitly explain what the sequel is like. We can show off various pieces of two different tech demos, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it makes it so it's not that big of a, not this experimental game issue that we would otherwise have. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, like with the backer rewards, we took that to our players during that same month and a half we were working on the document. You know, we went to them and we were like, okay, you know, what is it that you guys want, with the understanding that we're not going to do any physical goods because the fulfillment stuff gets nuts and that's just going to make us have to have a higher overall goal. So it's only stuff that is intangibles that, you know, for the most part go into the game and, you know, make it cooler for everybody, hopefully. And so, you know, people told us, and we worked on a like public Google Doc with it where, we were laying out all the rewards and stuff and putting in prices and things. And, you know, we had people going, oh, there's a hole there between, you know, you need something at $35. What if you did this and this? And, you know, so we had an enormous amount of feedback from people that were both familiar with Kickstarters and completely unfamiliar with Kickstarters, which is a really good mix for us, because a lot of our, a number of our backers are, people who have never used Kickstarter before by design and are going, this is, and they've explicitly commented on the thing, this is probably the first and last Kickstarter I'll ever back. I'm really excited for this though, you know, and, you know, it's because they know us and know that we have a, you know, commitment to actually doing things, you know, right, and actually delivering on things, you know, and not putting ourselves in situations where we can't. I mean, you know, we wouldn't charge for Stars Beyond Reach, you know, since we weren't sure we could deliver, you know, and that sort of thing. So it's kind of a matter of a combination of having to be the right game that's not too experimental, and then having lots and lots of feedback from players for about a month and a half.
Yeah, but definitely. And I keep saying this, but there's just so many topics we can branch off into. And for those of you still listening to this cast, like I said, I hate to cut these discussions short. I usually like to let things wrap up, or, you know, we come to a conclusion, but we gotta end things before we hit the 3 hour mark.
Yeah, we're the perpetual motion machine of game development conversations.
And we need a
We've never had a conversation naturally.
Yes, we have not. And we could get John Schaefer in here and the three of us. James, you would be put into a coma, I think, by the time we finish this off.
Oh, man. I love talking with John. But yeah, we do the same thing.
So I hate to do it, but I have to pull the ripcord now. We have to end this before things get too long, before we enter hour three. So... Chris, again, like I always say, it is an absolute pleasure talking to you, and definitely, if you're up to it, you know, we can easily have you back on. Like, we don't even need to pick a topic beforehand. We can easily just, something we'll talk about will turn into an hour and a half discussion. Like,
yeah,
it's
really,
nothing.
Right?
But honestly, though, I do wish you guys the best of luck with AI Wars 2. Like I said, I've been following you guys over the last year. I've definitely seen how things have taken a turn, and I do wish you the best of luck with the game. As you've said, this is going to be the sequel to the game that really put Arkhan on the map. So I really do hope that it does turn out to be a winner for you guys on Kickstarter, and especially to see what you can do almost like a second time around with that ambitious concept.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Not a problem. James, I think this is the first time you sat on like an actual game design discussion here on the podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
How are you doing there?
Oh, no, I'm definitely good. Yeah, learning a lot.
All right. So, again, we're going to wrap things up here. Like I said at the start, you know, when we started this about 4 days ago, we're going to put this podcast up a little bit out of order compared to the rest of the cast. So if you're still listening to this now, the AI Wars 2 Kickstarter should be still going on. Be sure to check that out. There'll be links to it in the podcast notes below. And like I said, hopefully, if you're not too busy, Chris, I would love to have you on. We could do a building the game segment on AI Wars. Hopefully, it'll still probably be an hour and a half, 2 hours, but it'll be a fascinating conversation nonetheless.
Yeah, we'll just have to see how it goes in the next period. I'm kind of bouncing in and out, but yeah, I always love coming on here, so we'll have to see what we can work out schedule-wise.
Awesome. So for those of you still awake, thank you so much for tuning into this extra long edition of the Perceptive Podcast. If you'd like to support Game Wisdom, as always, we have several options available. Be sure to check out the Patreon campaign. If you'd like to support Game Wisdom and help us grow and, of course, fund things here, if we can hit some of the stretch goals, it will mean more content for everyone to enjoy. Right now, we are running an early bird discount for October in terms of the pricing for the rewards. If you'd like to support us and get a little discount, be sure to get that in before the end of October. If you'd like to write a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, hopefully our cast won't end up in the 2.5-3 hour long versions like this one, but we are always looking for new guests and new people to talk to. You can find all the information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. Be sure to check out both the YouTube channel and our Twitch stream. You can find YouTube under Game Wisdom, Twitch GW Bicer, both on the front page. We have recently hit our big milestone of 800 subscribers, and we are now slowly but surely making our way up to 1,000. You can find daily videos, critical pieces, game spotlights, and more. And last but not least, be sure to follow me on Twitter under GW Bicer for the latest updates of new content and thoughts from me throughout the day. Again, Chris, it was a pleasure hanging out with you almost the entire day today. We have to do it again soon. Hopefully we can have you on more regularly so we don't have these massive chunks of podcasts.
Yeah. Well, likewise. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
And James, nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too, man. Yeah.
And James, again, thank you for coming on. I'm sure you definitely learned a lot today, and I hope you were taking notes on this stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely.
All right, so again, thank you so much for tuning in and enduring with our very long discussion. We will see you all next week with another great podcast, and be sure to tune in Thursdays at 7:30 EST for our weekly live show. It won't be as long as this one, but we still have a lot of fun nonetheless. Thanks again for tuning in. Have a great rest of the week, and we will see you all again next time. Take care.